Hello and welcome to the Conscious Consulting Podcast, where we will introduce you to the Conscious Consulting philosophy. Together with our senior advisors from all around the world, we blend the deep knowing of wisdom traditions, technology, modern science, and business, and show you how to transform this wisdom into impact in your daily life as a consultant, leader, or entrepreneur. Welcome to the CCG community. We have a very special conversation for you today. Founder of the Conscious Consulting Group and senior advisor Julia Julian is in conversation with Fred Kaufman, executive coach, advisor on leadership and culture, and author of the books Meta Management, Conscious Business, and Meaning Revolution. He was called one of the best coaches in the world by LinkedIn founder Jeff Weiner. Sheryl Sandberg said he was one of the people that changed her life. And Ken Wilber says the book Conscious Business has the power to transform the world. Fred Kaufman is also the founder of the Institute for Conscious Business and Conscious Leadership. And in this conversation, Julie and Fred are talking about conscious leading and consulting, how the business world has transformed since writing the book Conscious Business in 2006, and how you can help people find their true nature, why compassion is the key to happiness, and how to lead with purpose and clarity. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this wonderful episode on the Conscious Consulting Podcast.
Welcome, Fred Kaufman. Welcome, Fred, to the Conscious Consulting podcast and video. I'm super happy to have you here, of course. And yeah, welcome from Spain to Mexico.
Yes, what a pleasure to see you across space.
Across the space, but the Spanish-speaking area. So, Fred, I think it's really been like, I was thinking about 7, 8, 9 years ago that we met the first time when you helped the consulting company where I was partner then to grow and expand and to transform. So we have been in contact ever since that. And we met in San Francisco. We met again in Indiana. So we met in different spaces. And it's so exciting also to see how you are always more and more growing and developing. And there is one thing that I would like to start with the question, which is that you wrote Conscious Business, I think it's really almost about 20 years ago. And for yes. me, you are maybe, please correct me, the first one who like brought together the topic of consciousness and conscious into the business context. I haven't seen a lot of that before. And so 20 years ago, you wrote the book, and I'd like to ask you, how do you see that the level of consciousness and conscious business has evolved since that? What has changed in business in this last 20 years since you wrote the book to now? How do you see how leadership has developed in that time?
No, it's a delicate question because, of course, things have changed and people have an awareness of the topics that relate to human interaction and the way that people work together for the good of all or in detriment of some significant parts of our community. So I have to say that there is a deeper level of awareness in terms of what's important. I don't believe that there's any deeper level of mastery or understanding of how to behave in terms of achieving a higher level of performance, connection, peace of mind. I don't see that. I wish I did. So today, yes, you could say, if we look at the scholars, the people, some extraordinary CEOs and consultants, there are some very enlightened people, which I don't know they existed before. I think there is a progress in philosophy, in science, in spirituality and our understanding. There are some great, there's great wisdom, pandits, you know, and gurus, scholars and teachers that show up. But as I said, it's an eternal work where those who get a glimpse of the truth have to adjust their teaching to the times. Like in Buddhism, the Dharma is always the same. It's always the same. Nothing much has changed. I believe the truth is the truth, and it doesn't change. But the way to communicate that truth changes with the times. The trend is going the wrong way, so to speak, because we're ever more powerful, we're not ever more wise. But that has been true 20 and 40 and 60 years ago as well. So far we haven't destroyed each other or humanity or the environment, but we're getting closer.
Maybe also your intention in your work is to help maybe develop and deepen our consciousness and our awareness in leaders who have powerful positions. So this is my assumption, but as you so often ask people, what is your job? And that's a question that you ask very often. I'd like to ask you, Fred, what is your job?
My job is to remind people of their true nature and help them express it consciously in business and beyond. That's my job. That's how I define my life mission. That's my job. And whatever I do, I measure against that. That's not exactly what I sell. That's not what I propose when I do consulting, although I'm not hiding it. But it's the expression of realization about who you are, which is, in my view, the same as what the world is and what other people are. And with that depth of awareness, then come out, so to speak, but express it and manifest it through the different activities of your life. Which it's like being consciously, living consciously, working consciously. But I don't really endorse completely. I understand the model, and I think it's a reasonable model about the levels of consciousness. There are many ways in which people grow in higher and higher levels or deeper levels of self-awareness. But my spiritual or my metaphysical attitude is more the direct path. Like you either see it or you don't.
But we really live in this paradigm where people are on a self, as you say, self-optimization trip, and they make everything a means to an end. Like spirituality becomes a mean to an end, and the end is to be better than others or more enlightened or more spiritual. So we call it the creation of the spiritual ego, which is really, exactly, as you say, the exact opposite of the realization that nothing exists independently, that there is no separate self. I mean, this is the basic teaching of Zen and Buddhism, and I think Advaita, many...
Everybody, yeah, exactly. Everything. All the wisdom traditions would say that.
I mean, and a lot of people, as you said, say ultimately we are like characters in a dream, like interacting with self, but there's only one host, one shared consciousness. It's like the host for all of us. So there are like so many analogies. Realization, to say, is really ultimately unglamorous. There is no glamour to this realization. And as you say, it's really hard to get there. And once you have realized this, and it's huge difference between understanding it intellectually and experiencing, making a full experience, immersing with being in connection and seeing that everything is related, that nothing exists independently. And it's the death of the ego. And this is somehow counterintuitive for leaders. because they are cultivated and maybe successful because of ego, not because of the state of enlightenment, realizing that they don't exist independently. And ultimately, we could say this is the precondition for being a great leader, but it's hard to get there. So for me, my question would be, how do you do that? How do you help your clients to realize what they really are? Because this is a deeply spiritual practice and experience related to that.
I feel my contract with them is not to bring that to the center, but it is to to alleviate the suffering that is calling them to realize that truth, but alleviate the suffering and help them achieve the maximum level of peace and happiness that is compatible with the level of self-realization that they are able to integrate in their lives. And that is where I would agree with you, that there are levels of consciousness. So there are levels of ability to integrate these truths. And I'm not saying I even know the highest level. Like I know what I know, and I can't see what I can't see. But I can see that many of the people in business are pursuing ultimately self-defeating purposes, because you're not going to be peaceful and you're not going to be happy when you get that promotion. I know, I've seen too many people. And you know, after you get your first billion, you want two. And after you get two, you want to be in the Forbes list. And after you're in the Forbes list, you want to be on top. And after you're on top, you want to stay on top. And then you want other kind of power. It's never enough. Nothing is ever enough for the dissolution of the sense of lack. That lack always comes back. So it's possible to trust the process and help people pursue what I believe is a self-defeating goal, but in a way that will prepare them to then aspire to somebody something that is less self-defeating. So it's a gradual approach. And in this, as they grow in that search for peace and happiness, they realize that peace and happiness are simply other ways to speak about love. There's no peace and no happiness without love. There's no peace and happiness without justice. There's no peace and happiness without truth. So now love, truth, peace, happiness, justice, freedom. Now they are like different facets of the same diamond. And the power over others is not there. The power over others is like the shadow is the other side. Or the ability to destroy is the other side, is the fear, the separation, the sense of alienation. So it's possible to help people pursue their deepest goals without helping them necessarily accomplish their more shallower or manifest desires. That's what I do. My strategy is very, you can say devious, but it's a deviousness in service of the other. So it's a little bit of a trick. So my approach is to present to the others, to the people that study, tools that are intellectually unassailable. And nothing is mine. I've learned everything. So I've just put a toolkit together with an integration. I call it conscious business. You can call it anything, conscious consulting, doesn't matter. But I put together a set of tools that are quite normal, almost obvious, that are underwhelming, because people say, well anybody can do that. I mean, I don't want to be mysterious, but to say, when something happens in the world, instead of thinking that it happened to you, to conceive that what happened, it didn't happen to you. So it's not the drought is not something that God did to you. It's just dry. Or if it rains, it didn't rain on your birthday. It just rained. It just happened to be your birthday, but it didn't happen to you. And you're not guilty for it either. But what you are is able to respond. Just like Stephen Covey said, you're response able in the face of things, not for things. So, of course, neither you nor I have anything to do with the pandemic. That's a disaster, a plague that came upon the world for whatever reasons. But I can guarantee it wasn't me and it wasn't you. And then the normal attitude is, well, has nothing to do with me. It's just a curse. And, you know, I'm a poor victim of something that came about via natural or unnatural causes. Doesn't matter. But whatever causes it was, they were outside of my control. Or you can feel guilty, like we misbehaved and I misbehaved, so this is a punishment and I did something and blah, 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 blame on me. Oh my God, no, mea culpa. Which is like blaming yourself or victimizing yourself. And the alternative, more in line with like Viktor Frankl's perspective, existentialist perspective, is I am able to respond to it. I have the chance to choose what to do about it, not for it to be there or not to be there. That's outside of my control. But what am I going to do now? What are you going to do now? So you're able to respond to anything. You're not able to respond for anything because it wasn't your fault. It's not you for you to blame. Now, if you think about it, it's absolutely obvious. There's nothing special about this, a sense of unconditional responsibility in the face of any event that happens in your life or that affects you. And I can talk about it. There's a lot of philosophy, you know, psychology. It's unassailable. And people will say, yeah, this is great. You know, let's be responsible. Let's be leaders, not victims. We're going to respond to things. And then something bad happens, and they feel like a victim. And they say, yeah, sorry, you know, my other meeting went over, and that's why I arrived late, so I had another. Or, you know, I had this problem. And they still speak in third person. They blame other circumstances and so on. Or, you know, if someone disagrees with you, before you start opposing them and fighting with them, like, make sure you understand what they say. Whether to change your mind, because they may be right, and you may discover your argument has a problem, or to find out where you disagree with them, and where would be the best way to point out the divergence between your way of thinking and their way of thinking. So it's clearly a superior strategy to understand what the other person is telling you. And yet almost no one can do it. You start arguing, you raise your voice, you want to convince the other person by shouting or by speaking slower and louder and becoming menacing. And that's the worst thing you could ever do. The other person shuts down, they start speaking louder and pushing back on you, and then it's a mess. I don't know a single person that in a quiet state of mind wouldn't agree with me 150%. Everybody agrees with this. But yet, and this is the trick, they can't do it. And it drives people mad, because when they read the material and when they see it, it's obvious that this is the superior way to operate. But when they try to do it, they can't. And it's like a curse, because now you know that there's a better way. And you can't listen to other people when they disagree with you. You just get furious. You it's like you see red and you lose everything. Or you say, if you make a commitment and you're not going to be able to fulfill it, you call the person in advance, you let them know, you negotiate to minimize the consequences. You honor your word. I mean, this is not like spiritual enlightenment. I'm not teaching Advaita or some Sanskrit old text. I'm saying, look, if you made a promise and something goes wrong and you're not going to make it, call the person. I mean, for Christ's sake, just call them and say, look, I need to apologize. This happened. Explain to them what happened and ask them, what are the consequences so you can minimize them? And take responsibility because you are breaking your word. So at least honor it because you can't deliver. 100%. I mean, literally, nobody can say no. And if someone says, well, that's not a good way to proceed, it's like, okay, would you like me to do this to you? So when I make a promise to you, would you like me to break it? And so, I mean, I know all the ways to argue for these things. And this is so Western, so normal. I never talk about what I'm telling you now. I don't talk about that. It's not necessary. Why? Because once they agree with all these obviously reasonable practices, and the person tries to do them, they can't. And then they'll come and say, no, this doesn't work. I said, this works. You don't work. The problem is not the tool. The problem is the tool user. And that's where I join exactly with what you said before. But I don't tell that to people. I don't start by telling people, oh, you know, it's your level of consciousness, your emotional balance, your inner health. I mean, people who want that, they go to see a guru. They go to see other people. Hire me as a business advisor. They don't hire me as a guru or a spiritual teacher or a meditation teacher or a consciousness teacher. Conscious business for them is like, oh, okay, this guy found a brand. It's a nice word. You know, everybody talks about consciousness. I want to be conscious. Great. I play the part of this like little joker or I'm the court jester, as I tell people. You know, I make people laugh. I share stories and all that, and say, yeah, I learned a lot. It's okay. Now put it in practice. They fail miserably, and when they fail miserably, the real learning starts. But without that failure, people still have, it's like somebody saying, you know, I'll be happy when I have $1 million. If I win the lottery and I have $1 million, that would be the end of all my trouble. And there are two options. One is to say, you know, that's not true. Let's talk about it because it's not going to happen, blah, blah. And we can argue until you're blue in the face. Or another is, hey, look, here's $1 million. Go be happy. Come back in a week and tell me how happy you are. And the person will come like, oh, great, I have $1 million. And then it'll come in a week and say, I'm miserable. Okay, so it wasn't $1 million.
I mean, Fred, what you're talking about, I don't use spiritual language with clients. I don't talk about consciousness and enlightenment. I don't think that's the right context for that. I think that's important for us. And the question is the translation. And I remember talking about tools, the tool of that you teach us was how to lead difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. And I find that is really, really helpful because this helps you to stay clear and present and conscious in the face of conflict, where emotions can come up and you lose your conscience and you just lose it and then you just make it worse. So what you're saying is you teach people, and I think that's a deeply spiritual practice. This is what meditation basically is about, is to notice, to learn to notice something about their own behavior, to notice that being late and lying about it is a lack of integrity, is not honoring their own word. I think we can even talk about personal mastery is to own your own decisions, to own your life, to own your choices, and to fully own them is to be with them and not try to lie to yourself or others or find excuses. And these are, like, as you say, basic small things, but actually they're huge. They make a huge difference in people's lives once they realize that they lead. When they are not their word in small things, nobody will follow them in the big things. And this is a deep realization. People are not aware of that, that leadership doesn't mean to make the big decisions, but it's about that everyday small behavior that people are observing and where they see, is this guy taking himself seriously? Is he committed to his own word? Is he his word or her word? So this is what leadership is. As you many times say, the role of leaders is create a context, create a culture, create an atmosphere, you can call it many things, where people can thrive and show up and manifest and self-actualize. That's a very noble, I would say, purpose, a very noble thing to do. But that needs this kind of awareness how life actually works. Most leaders and also consultants, I think, are not aware what's actually going on behind the words that they're using and behind this abstraction and apparent separate objects. And this is maybe a contribution we could bring to this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, as you were speaking, Julia, I remembered a way people described Steve Jobs. They said Steve Jobs could create a reality distortion field around him, and that people were entranced by this. Like, you would think you can do anything. And I like the term. It's very like good marketing, and it has a very nice ring. But I think that what conscious leader creates, it's a reality clarifying field. It feels distorted to the people that live in the world of objects that are already given, that are unchangeable. So I don't think Steve Jobs distorted reality. He clarified what is true in reality, which is the beauty, the elegance, the grace of the designs, the commitment to make it something that would change people's lives in a magnificent way. Regardless of his own personal quirks, it's just a human, but this is not a reality distortion field. People call it distortion because they live in that distorted reality. A true leader, the conscious leader, creates a reality enabling field, a field in which people can connect to the truth, to the accuracy, to the beauty, the power, the sweetness of connection that underlies everything that manifests as separate. That is not distortion. That will only be called distortion by the people who are entranced by the mirage. So they think we live in a world that doesn't exist. And the leader says, no, it's possible. It's possible. I see it. That's the visionary. I see it. It's there. It's like, well, where do you see it? It's not there. It's like, well, yes, it's there. You can see it, but I see it. And it's a distortion of your reality because you're stuck in it. So the inspiration that a true leader can bring is to open up a deeper level of truth that is able to manifest in the people that are being led now.
That's very beautiful. And yeah, I think also very inspiring definition of leadership. And as you were talking, it's clarifying, it's maybe also an act of creation, which is also a human ability to create something out of nothing. Somebody said this is what artists do, they create something out of nothing. But sometimes it's also entrepreneurs. They create something out of nothing. They invent something. And the invention doesn't start with a tangible product, but it starts with an idea, with a vision that you can see. Like you said, people could, like big artists, they could see the Pietà in a block. They didn't see a block of marble. They could see the Pietà, and what they did is just put away what's too much there. So this is what we can do, what we call the act of shaping and creating. And as you say, like creating a field, an enabling field, this is really, I think now we are at the core, what it really means to be true leadership, to create something, a field that aligns people without having to tell everybody what to do. It's this alignment is the field is aligning the people, and the field is filled with an information. The information is fueled by the vision that we are able to create as humans. And this is what I would say is a precious opportunity that we have as humans, and that we could honor if we could even imagine and make it possible for ourselves. A lot of leaders don't even see the possibilities for themselves to be someone like that. But you don't even have to be Steve Jobs. You can do it in a very small everyday situation. Even if you are in a little shop, you can create an energy field that is inspiring for people. And people do it all the time. What is what is needed for people? Why are some people able to do that and others not? And what can we consultants add to that? What is our part in bringing this possibility into life, into realization, into manifestation?
I go back to what I said before when you asked me what my job is. I think what we can do is help people recognize that potential in themselves in the right way that fits their life conditions. Not everybody can be Steve Jobs, but everybody can create a field of beauty. Everybody can create a field of truth. You can be a waiter in a restaurant. And I've had my day changed by the experience of being served with kindness or being served with unkindness. So something as simple as a cheerful waiter that is really trying to make your eating experience something more than just food that fuels your biology. You can be a plumber. I mean, God knows when you need a plumber, what a blessing it is to have a plumber that comes and does the job and finishes properly and charges you the right thing and it's reliable and it fulfills his or her commitments. And without that, you'd be in trouble. You can be a dentist, you can be a hygienist, you can be any, I mean, it doesn't matter what you are. You can be a truck driver, it doesn't matter. So recognizing that I would say the field activity, your ability to create a field around you is completely independent of your occupation, completely independent. You can be a mother, you can be a stay-at-home father, you can be anything. And then still create a field of love and beauty and truth and freedom and justice around you and with the people that you join in community. That's true leadership. And just like a magnetic field aligns the iron shavings, that field will align the people that respond to it. I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of people that don't respond to it now because they've forgotten who they are. So now it's hard. And it's not very appealing to do that because not too many people will be aligned, but this kind of magnetic force, because we are, I would say, as dark at times as there's always been. People are magnetized more by power, by fame, by wealth, by sexiness. So suffering, as the Buddha said, is the first noble truth, because suffering is what opens the door to learning. When you're suffering, you say, something's wrong. Something's wrong. It's just like physical pain. You say, something's wrong. And then you go into it, and you wonder, okay, what's going on? But the pain is a blessed signal that you are behaving in a way that doesn't suit your body. And I think the same is in life. Most people are suffering, but they have no idea why. And they persist because of this inertia in being magnetized by force fields that pander to the lowest instincts, survival, fear, hate, disagreement. And, it's like junk food. It tastes good. I mean, it is great. I mean, I'm sure, some people must feel great punishing animals and having the sense of power or killing other human beings. I mean, the kind of atrocities that we've been witness to are unbelievable. And they're happening every day, everywhere. So that's attractive. It's appealing.
But it's still a case when you look at the level of organizations and people, as you say, I think there's a lot of suffering in organizations.
Absolutely.
And exactly what people do in pursuit of power and success is not good for them. I think that you mentioned it also at the beginning. It's like all that stress. It's also a kind of addiction. And you think you want more and then you suffer more and then you need a remedy. And then you have all kind of addictions. Also work and success is an addiction. And I think a lot of consultants are also in this addiction of being successful, probably, having more clients, having more. I mean, I've met a lot. I've been there, I think. And you find out the more you get, the more you suffer. So at a certain point to understand why that suffering is there and where it comes from. And as you say, I think the first thing is to realize and admit that I'm not happy, that I'm suffering. And I feel that also in organizations and also young leaders, there is somehow a higher awareness of that suffering, and that there is a generation that says, I would like to do it differently. I don't want to go down that rat race. And I think that, as you say, there are not so many people responding. I sense there is some kind of resonance with putting something different out there and say, okay, what if there was a different possibility? What if there was a way of like eating without destroying yourself? What if there was a way of working and even being successful to a certain extent, which also is nice and is joyful and can be really joyful and is great, without being destructive to yourself and others? I feel that there is some sense of questioning up there. And the question is like the opening where, I mean, there's the suffering and then there is a question. And the question is always the opening where we can come in. If there is no question, there is nowhere to connect. There's nothing really we can do. But I sense that there are some people who are fed up and who just think it has to be that way. But if they would say, what if it could be different? What if it doesn't have to be like this? What if we could resolve it and transform it to a way where it's doing good and doing well, where well-being, in a deeper sense, leads to well-doing as well? I mean, that's what I'm up to, what I think could be a possibility. I think we can go beyond the possibilities of the past. Okay. I mean, a little bit. And yes, as you say, yes, all that knowledge is around. We talk about wisdom traditions here who have been around thousands of years. As you say, there's nothing new about it. Absolutely nothing. But we have forgotten about it and we don't know how to apply it and we don't know what it means, what's the meaning of it and how to practice it. And I think this is something that we can just do ourselves as consultant or as influencers who influence somehow. We have to start with ourselves and practice that and see, is there a possibility? Can we reduce the suffering and increase the joy, love and everything in ourselves? And it's not about new things. I think this is a pitfall to look for something new. The secret is maybe to apply and see what is there, what has been never not there. That's the hardest thing to see and to honor. Yes. That's the best we can hope for, maybe.
Amen to that.
Good. So, Fred, maybe we said we somehow closing the circle. You said you remind people, and there's one question we ask everyone in our podcast at the end of the podcast, which is a very, I would say, blunt question, and you could even say it's very like basic. But the question is, what's the secret to a good life for you?
The secret is that life is good. Any life. Even the most apparently horrific life has a good purpose, which is the self-recognition of what is. At some level, every life is horrible. Every biography ends with death, with old age, disease at best. As the Buddha said, best thing that can happen is you get old, you get sick, and you die. That's as good as it gets. But worse than that, you can suffer a lot before. So I don't think there is a good life like, hey, this is good. But the truth is every life is good. Every life is meaningful. not good in the sense of pleasure or even the permanent sense of what we call joy or happiness, but even the pain, even the suffering, even the horror of witnessing what we are doing to each other, it is bearing witness to what is. And that witnessing is good. That's goodness itself. So I think that's the secret, not that there's a technique to get there, but the secret is that that is what is always underneath everything. That's my blunt answer to your blood question. Never thought of that before, but it's a powerful question.
Thank you. And it was a very powerful answer. Yeah. Thank you. So Fred, thank you very much. I think we've gone very far and deep and in all kind of different directions in this conversation. So I'd like to thank you to walk with me and to explore together and to share all different aspects of life. Actually, it was a very philosophical and interesting conversation, but actually this is the job, maybe. This is maybe our job, to have those conversations and share it, and just not for the purpose or for the idea of people liking it, but inviting it and take it or not to take it. And this is, in this sense, I'd like to say goodbye and thank you to all people who are listening to us. And thank you very much.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the Conscious Consulting Podcast. If you want to dive deeper into the field of conscious consulting, become a part of our community, visit ccg-group.eu and subscribe to our newsletter so we can stay connected. You will find the link in the show notes. We look forward to having you on board.